Buying or selling your home? Real Estate for Life can connect you with a pro-life real estate agent. When Real Estate for Life receives a referral fee, they donate 65% to Catholic Answers. Learn more at realestateforlife.org. Welcome back to Catholic Answers Live. I am Cy Kellett, your host. Joe Heschmeyer continues as our guest this hour. Joe, the proprietor behind Shameless Popery podcast, YouTube page, also author of lots of wonderful books. You hear us talking about his books and giving his books away, including The Eucharist is Really Jesus, Pope Peter, one that we didn't publish, but he did in fact write, A Man Named Joseph.
Yeah, that's very timely for
yesterday. Yeah, so buy it yesterday if you're able to time travel. And we're going to go back to calls. It's Ask Me Anything. We're going to go back to calls. But we have a guest first that Joe and I would like to talk with and share with you, because this is something that you may have noticed that we've been doing from time to time. Having on one of these, most are relatively young people, at least compared to me, probably mostly compared to Joe as well. Who are doing a wonderful job in the podcasting world, in the YouTube world of explaining the faith, defending the faith, inviting people into the faith. We'll probably talk next week a little bit about how effective all that is. It's amazing the effect that the Catholic blogosphere, so to speak, is having. We used to joke about it being a place of great negativity. It's turned around. It's a place of where there's lots of joyful presentation of the Catholic faith. And one of those presentations is by Drew the Catholic. And you can just go to his page on YouTube, Drew the Catholic. Thank you very much for being here with us.
Hey, Cy. Hey, Joe. Thanks for having me, guys.
It's
very nice to get to talk to you, because you're also, I don't know if you're the organizer or one of the organizers of the Catholic, is it Influencers Conference, or how do you?
The Catholic Creator Conference.
Yeah. And you did it last year.
So Kyle Whittington and I are the co-organizers, and last year was sort of like the test run of the conference, and really, we'd only planned for it to be, you know, a weekend with the boys at the Cigar Lounge. We thought 12 people would come, and then word got out, and all of a sudden, tons of applications are flooding in. We're like, oh no, we actually have to make this a real conference, and it sort of just grew.
If you advertised a weekend with the boys at the Cigar Lounge, you probably would have had applications flood in.
Well, definitely.
It's funny, because I think it was Edgar who first started. One of the younger guys here in our media department, audio and video department here, what we call studios, said, we got to get involved in this. And then another one wanted to go, and another one wanted to go. I guess we had a Catholic Answers contingent there. Joe, were you there last year at the Catholic Creators?
I was not there last year.
You should go, Joe.
I'm planning on going this year.
Oh, you're going this year. Okay.
Yeah. So adjust accordingly your expectations. I have to share some bad news. A fellow by the name of Kyle Whittington is online saying Drew is a nerd. So the internet is a terrible place. So I felt the need to share.
That is just horrible.
I wanted to see if people had questions, and no, it's just personal attacks. This is
well, Kyle Whittington is my arch nemesis, so it makes sense.
There you go.
I wish I had an arch nemesis. I've never been quite together enough to have an arch nemesis. So tell us about the Catholic Creators Conference, who you want to come to it, and what it's doing, because I think this is a really exciting new development in the presentation of the Catholic faith to all generations.
Yeah, well, the conference was really born out of both Kyle and I being terminally online, probably spending way too much time on Catholic YouTube. And one of the things you realize pretty quickly is that online Catholic spheres are not necessarily as charitable or as sanctified as you would hope for Catholics. And
people
a lot of our
calling each other nerds.
Yeah, exactly. You know, that's why with my arch nemesis, we started this. You know, it's a perfect case study of what we want to accomplish. And one of the main goals is, you know, if we're out there evangelizing in the digital continent, which is all of our goal, we should be a united front, and we should approach each other with charity. And so one of the things we thought is that if we could just get some of these people in the same room rather than just seeing each other as text on a screen, then they'd be able to have real conversations. And so maybe the next time someone says something kind of strange or that you disagree with, instead of making a response video, you would just call them or maybe have them on your show. And that's sort of the culture that we wanted to develop with it. And it's just good to get everyone together. And then there's sort of a third part, our third goal, more of a long-term goal, is to really put Catholics at the forefront of the culture again. You know, the Catholic Church used to be the driving force in culture in the world. And I think we can get there again. And so the hope is if we get all of these people who are creative, who are doing this work of evangelism online in the same room, we'll be more united in our efforts, but we'll also have a bigger impact.
That is just great. And you look at these things and you can feel there's a change in the Catholic online presence in recent years. It really was kind of dominated by negativity for a while. But you forget that that's because of the conscious decisions people make, people like you who get in there and get involved. What do you do on your YouTube channel, Drew?
My YouTube channel is all over the place, but a lot of times what I talk through is conversion stories. I'm a convert myself, and so sharing my story and some of my friends who have converted, that's sort of how it started. But I cover a wide range of things, you know, some apologetic stuff, some culture stuff, and it's kind of just a hodgepodge of a bunch of different things. But since we've started this conference, it's actually leaned into really highlighting other creators. You know, we've met tons of other people who are, you know, have hundreds of thousands of followers. Some of them only have hundreds of followers. Some of them just posted their first video. And so I've almost shifted to really highlighting those people and the work they're doing and making those connections. And building that community. It's amazing what we've seen. Like, we have a couple creators that we've connected with who are coming to the conference who just a couple of months ago started posting, and they're already growing. They've, you know, tripled or even 1,000x their channel size. And more than that, they're actually impacting people. So anything I can do to really just support other people's online evangelism ministries is sort of the focus we've taken with my channel and with the conference. So,
and is this a big get for you to get Joe Heschmeyer to come there?
I think he wanted to come. I would hope he wanted to come. But we were excited to find out that you were coming, Joe. It was awesome to hear that.
That is
awesome. Yeah, I'm excited to be going.
So how can people find out about it when and where?
Yeah, so this year's conference is actually already sold out. Part of that, I think, is
we're just doing this to gloat, just for people listening at home.
That makes no sense at all. Expand it. You can buy another box of cigars.
That would be, yeah. The problem is the venue size this year. We're at a cap of 80, and we were not expecting this. We would have thought we'd still be selling tickets. And then this organization, you might have heard of it, Catholic Answers, they decided to be our presenting sponsor, which we were thrilled when you guys announced that you would do that. And I think as soon as you guys retweeted that, we started getting tons of applications again. It was like a repeat of last year, and we sold out pretty quickly. I think within like the first month of opening applications for this year. That being said, you can find out a lot on our website for next year's conference as that starts to
Okay. Super Bowl next year, we'll just rent the stadium.
Yeah, exactly.
I'm really glad you said that about the Catholic Answers side of it, because the fact is we are excited about being associated with you. This is the kind of thing where we are well aware that we have very, very fine apologists and this, you know, kind of glorious history behind us of these people like the Matt Frads and the Jason Everts and the Patrick Madrids of the world. But there are generations, you know what happens, Drew? I don't know if you know this. They keep being born. And then they have a new way of talking about things, a new way of thinking about things. They need it to be mediated to them by people who can do that job. And so exciting when young people take up that mantle.
Yeah. I think especially with Gen Z, we're seeing a lot of young Catholics, you know, becoming passionate about their faith. They're being reinvigorated because of, you know, this online content. And really, this is the way we all communicate now, right? So it shouldn't really come as a surprise that someone like watching this show on YouTube is getting really good catechesis, and then it spurs them on to do the same thing, because this is where we're making culture and making connections. So it makes sense that a lot of people are feeling a sense of mission to kind of reach out in that space, right? But they're doing a lot of creative things in that arena.
Well, I'm very grateful for you to come on and talk about it. I'm also grateful for all the work you and that nerd friend of yours are doing. And so much great stuff is happening, and people need to know about it. There is it's a special moment in Catholic media, and I can remember a few others I've been in Catholic media since 96, and every now and then you get these moments where something is happening and you got to pay it. You know, when the spirit moves, move. And I think that's why we wanted to be associated with you, Drew.
Yeah.
Sorry, can I ask Drew a quick question?
Yeah.
Drew, what were you doing in 1996?
I was 1 year old, so I was probably just crawling around and making sounds and pooping diapers, I guess. I don't know.
I just wanted to check. Yeah. I didn't know if you were going to even been born yet.
Were you reading my articles at least?
Definitely.
Yeah, I think come on.
That's the target age range.
Yeah, that was. Yep. Oh, that hurts. Drew the Catholic, check him out on YouTube. Thank you, Drew. Thanks very much for taking the time with us.
Thanks for everybody.
All right, Joe Heschmeyer is our guest. We're going to come right back and do Ask Me Anything for the rest of the hour with Joe on Catholic Answers Live.
Let us help you with your question today on Catholic Answers Live.
Do you have a question but prefer to ask it privately? Catholic Questions can help. Go to CatholicQuestions.com to ask your question online, email us, drop us a letter, or give us a call. Longtime Catholic Answers Live apologist and author Jim Blackburn or another Catholic Questions apologist will be happy to assist you. Catholic Questions proudly supports Catholic Answers Live, so visit us at CatholicQuestions.com today. That's CatholicQuestions.com.
Hi, this is Mike Aquilino with a few words about St. Maximus the Confessor. The emperor wanted to compromise doctrine in order to make peace with heretics. It was all about politics, but Maximus the Confessor dared to oppose him and would not back down. For this, he was charged with treason and had his tongue and right hand cut off so that he could not speak or write against the emperor. His silence resounded everywhere, and truth prevailed.
Welcome back to Catholic Answers Live. I am Cy Kellett, your host. Joe Heschmeyer is our guest. You kind of knew that there was another breakthrough in Catholic media when Father Mike was the number one podcast in the world.
Amen.
Didn't you know it? Like at that point, you're like, oh,
something. We're so back. Yeah.
We are so back. And I don't think a lot of, especially people who don't live in that space every day, realize how much great Catholic content is being made. The big guys that are making great content, the old guys, all the people have been around for decades, but these young guys are coming in and doing just as well. They're doing fantastic.
Yeah. What I really like about the attitude these guys have, I mean, both the guys behind the Catholic Creators Conference and just a lot of the emerging voices I'm seeing, is that the guys who really have their head on right, they realize we're not trying to tear each other down and certainly not trying to tear each other down for clicks. That's like the lowest form of internet engagement. And if that's what you want to do, go like start a cooking channel. Like, don't do this to our Lord.
But go the guys beat Bobby Flay.
Why you? Yeah, exactly.
All right. Sorry.
Exactly. No, that's all right. You just got me thinking about food now. But the guys are in it for the right reason. You know, it's like they realize we're not competing for the same slice of attention as everybody else. We're growing the pie. I'm using all cooking metaphors now. Because we're trying to bring people to Jesus Christ. And
amen.
Not so that we can get views, but so that people can go to heaven.
Yeah, that is it, Joe. You know, that is it. And these young people have that attitude. It's wonderful. All right, let's go to Denver, Colorado, where Taylor is listening. Taylor, welcome. Go ahead with your question for Joe. Hi, Taylor.
Oh, hello?
Hi, yep. Taylor. Yeah, you're on the air with Joe Heschmeyer.
Hi, Cy. Welcome back. We missed you.
Oh, thank you.
I have a little bit of a silly question for you, Joe. It involves my toddler. She really
like
loves
so
Halloween,
far.
And she keeps telling me she wants to dress up like a witch. And I don't know how to, I don't know if I should allow that. I don't know if I shouldn't allow it. And if I should, why? And if I shouldn't, why? And she's very young. I'm trying to get her to be towards like a more whimsical costume, like a banana or something, or a cookie, but she doesn't really want it. She likes all this stupid stuff.
The
spiders,
church,
the witches, the ghosts.
We have a teaching against dressing up as a banana. There's a whole encyclical on this from the 19th century. Joe, what about the toddler wanting to dress up like a witch for Halloween?
This is not something the church has, you know, you're not going to find a papal decree on toddlers dressing up as witches. And you'll actually find priests who give different advice. So I'm only going to give you my advice on this. I, by the way, have a 5-year-old daughter who I was going to say went through this same phase, but because we were just like, you cannot dress up as a witch, that made her immediately want to dress up as a witch like that much more. Which this is going to bode well for her teenage years. I already can tell.
Yeah, right.
You know, like just the type where if you're like, don't do X, it's like, well, I know what we're going to see her doing next. So know your daughter a little bit, but I would say you don't want to do anything that glorifies evil. It's okay if something is like spooky, but there's a difference between spooky and evil and demonic and all of this. And so that line can be a little bit, you know, fuzzy. I think it's fine for a kid to dress up as Darth Vader, even though he's clearly a bad guy. I don't think that's glorifying evil in the same way that somebody, you know, wanting to dress up as the devil would be. And so if you imagine a sort of spectrum from Darth Vader to the devil, then you say, like, where are witches on this? Well, it gets a little messy because a lot of times what a toddler has in mind is a really cartoonish kind of witch creature. And the reality, though, is that there are people who engage in occult witchcraft kind of practice, and they're opening the doors to actual demonic forces. And we don't want to play around with that. We don't want to engage in that. And so I would say don't do it. That's why I would say don't do it. And in fact, maybe a good conversation to have even with your daughter is to try to get a better sense of where she was even exposed to stuff that made her want to be a witch in the first place. Because sometimes it's where you're not expecting it. We had like an old timey Minnie Mouse cartoon, and it had witches in it and presented as like a fun kind of, and it's like, nope, well, we're cutting that out. We don't need to mess around with any of that. So a lot of this stuff, you know, I'm sure your daughter is just seeing it as like harmless and fun and kind of, you know, lightly spooky. So maybe, you know, a way to compromise would be find something that has a little bit of an element of spookiness to it while still being pretty. And maybe it's a little more interesting, no offense, than a cookie or a banana.
Taylor, I'm curious, what do you think about all that?
Yeah, that sounds great. I know exactly where she saw it. It's because on the TV that I let her watch, which I really shouldn't. So I know exactly what to cut out.
All right.
Yeah.
Beautiful.
But Joe, you're not one of those who's opposed to dressing up and having fun on Halloween.
Absolutely not. I'm very, very pro Halloween. I actually made a video on Chimps Potpourri back in October about how a lot of the anti-Halloween stuff is based on things that just are not true. You know, there's a claim, oh, this all comes from this pagan, you know, Celtic festival of Samhain. None of that's true. It did not. Like, historically, that is just nonsense. And we've got pretty good reasons to doubt anyone claiming anything like that. There's no records of Samhain being some day that the church then co-opted. That's not where All Saints Day or Halloween come from, et cetera, et cetera. And it's actually fine having things that recall death. So like skeletons are a great example of something where it's spooky without being evil. And so, you know, a skeleton, a skull is very much at home in Catholic art. And there's a whole area of Catholic art called Memento Mori, which is stuff meant to remind you of your death. And so there is actually a very healthy way of, in a sort of fun and playful way, teeing up and introducing this serious idea that, okay, we're going to be thinking about death for the next couple of days. And then you have All Saints Day, and then you have All Souls Day, and the entire month of November is dedicated to praying for the dead. And so it's a very nice kind of lead into the holiday and to the month, I should say, in a festive, joyful kind of way.
Taylor, thanks. It's always nice to talk with you. Thank you very much for the call. And it's fascinating how toddlers get interested in things. And you sometimes as a parent, you're like, where did this one come from? Like, I've never even seen this. The kid.
I have a great, my three-year-old. So my sister just brought by a bunch of stuff that her boys had kind of grown out of like superhero stuff. And both my 5 and 3-year-old are really into superheroes right now. And they don't know who a lot of them are. And so they got a bunch of this stuff and they're super excited. And last night, my son comes down and comes before us. And as if he's got a grand announcement, goes, Mom and Dad, I like superheroes more than dinosaurs and trucks.
What? What? That is a big announcement.
Exactly. I've seen.
Did you say something like, "Well, you know, son,
less solemnity"?
We love you anyways. We love you anyways. And we're always going to support you, no matter what, even if your choices seem odd to us. Trucks and dinosaurs are clearly better, but you know, whatever.
I mean, I don't get the truck thing. The dinosaur thing, yeah, it's pretty amazing. So.
You don't get the truck thing?
I'm not really. I was a truck toddler myself, but now I'm like, yeah, they're just in the way on the road.
One of the best things in the world is watching a toddler when the trash truck comes down the street.
Oh,
they flip
absolutely.
Out.
They're glued. They're like, glued to the front door. Just
I
watching.
Love that. All right, let's go to Christina in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, watching on YouTube. Christina, go ahead with your question for Joe.
Great. Thanks so much for taking my call. I had a question. Hopefully you can help me with some clarifications or distinctions between Sheol, hell, and purgatory, really for the purpose of understanding, like, are these all distinct states of being after death if you're not in heaven? And if any of them are synonymous with others, like the implications of that being like how closed off really is hell? And the reason that I'm asking you this is because really around like the, you know, Sheol, what is Sheol? And I've heard like, oh, that's equivalent to hell. But then I think about Jonah going to Sheol and, well, yep. he came back and like Jesus went down to Sheol and, you know, released people from Sheol. And I'm like, well, that doesn't seem very hell-like. That seems more purgatory-like.
Yeah. So Sheol was just kind of a catch-all term for the underworld in Hebrew. And so both the righteous and the wicked are described as going to Sheol. And in Greek, the word Hades exists, but Hades has much more the connotation of a place of suffering like hell. And so whereas Sheol just, you know, we could say the afterlife, the underworld, something like that, where it you're not really telling you any details other than, you know, the place people go when they die. And then it's sort of left a little bit vague. With Hades, there's much more the sense of, they're not just going to the underworld, they're going to hell. They're not just going to the afterlife, they're going to hell. And so you see this very clearly in Luke 16, where the rich man and Lazarus are both there, and Lazarus dies, and it goes to the bosom of Abraham, which is a place of the righteous dead who are awaiting entry into heaven, who, you know, Christ has not yet opened the gates of heaven. And so they're not in a place of suffering, clearly. They're in a place of comfort, but they're not experiencing the full presence of the vision of God. And then in contrast, the rich man, we're told, goes to Hades to be tormented. So now we have a clear sense of it being, okay, there is something of torment in Hades. Now, even there, you can say, you know, he's viewed as like just like talking with Abraham and all of this. And so it gets a little more messy. When Jesus descends into Sheol, and I mean, sometimes even in the Creed, you know, in the Apostles' Creed, it says he descended into hell, but we don't mean the hell of damnation. And the Catechism is actually very explicit about this. We mean the bosom of Abraham. We mean the place of the righteous dead, sometimes called the limbo of the fathers. But whereas we wouldn't describe that in modern English as hell, that would have been described as Sheol in the Hebrew sense of just like the underworld or the afterlife. So heaven and hell, are, and for that matter, purgatory, are more precise kind of place descriptions, whereas Sheol is just kind of a catch-all. So this is, by the way, one of the things worth keeping in mind when people say, oh, well, you don't see the word purgatory in the Bible. It's like, sure. But even in the terms of like the afterlife in the Old Testament, it was often very vague. These things become clearer kind of over time. And that's not particularly surprising.
That work, Christine?
Great. Yeah, that's very helpful. Thank you so much.
If you'd like a copy of Carlo's book, Dr. Broussard's book, Purgatory is for Real, since your question was involved purgatory as well, and he explained some of these things in that book, I'd be happy to send it to you. All you have to do is hang on. Edgar will get your information, and we'll send you out a copy of Purgatory is for Real, Good News About the Afterlife for Those Who Aren't Perfect Yet. The number here is 888-318-7884. David is in Peru, Illinois. Listening on the Catholic Answers app. Glad you're here with us, David. Go ahead with your question for Joe.
All right. So I've been running into some people who have claimed that Jesus was Muslim. I try to explain to them that he was of Jewish descent, went to temple, and that Islam wasn't a thing until a couple hundred years after Jesus had ascended. Apologetically, how do I better explain it or defend it?
It's tricky because a lot of the Muslim claims about Mary and Jesus are just flatly contradicted by everything we know. And because they've read it in the Quran and because they've been taught this is true, the fact that it is just very clearly contrary to all the historical data, people just ignore the historical data because it's like, well, you know, the history isn't divinely inspired and the Quran is. But it is worth just kind of stressing. So to give you an example, there is in the Quran this notion of the Injil, meaning the gospel of Jesus. And it seems that Muhammad incorrectly thought that Jesus had written his own gospel, which, you know, isn't correct. And so there are these references to the Torah and to the Injil when it's talking about the people of the book, Jews and Christians. But then allegedly, you know, the Jews and Christians corrupted these sources. Well, to this, I would say several things. Number one, you can look at things like the Dead Sea Scrolls. You can look at other archaeological finds, and you don't see some like early edition of the Torah or of any New Testament writings or of a lost gospel of Jesus in which it's actually teaching anything like Islam. It just doesn't exist. And so all the evidence points to the fact that this just is not true. So hopefully that helps. That's where I would kind of start, is where is the Injil? What can we say about it historically? And does it even exist?
That music means we got to take a quick break. David, thank you for the call. Joe Heschmeyer, our guest, right back with more on Catholic Answers Live. When the resurrected Jesus appeared to disciples on the road to Emmaus, they didn't recognize him until the breaking of the bread. The same is true today. In the Holy Eucharist, we really meet Jesus. In The Eucharist is Really Jesus, author Joe Heschmeyer explains how knowing Jesus in the Eucharist is the key to understanding all of Christian faith. Order your copy of The Eucharist is Really Jesus today at shop.catholic.com or get it at a good Catholic bookstore.
Our Lord needs articulate defenders of the truth to spread the joy of the Catholic faith. Catholic Answers Monthly Giving Club, Society 315, helps you fulfill the call in 1 Peter 3:15 to always be prepared to make a defense for the hope that is in you. For as little as $10 a month, you'll help Catholics grow in faith, bring lapsed Catholics home, and lead non-Catholics to the truth. Go to casociety315.com and join today.
We hope that one of the things that we communicate here at Catholic Answers Live is that our Catholic faith allows us to be fully serious about all the problems we encounter in the church and in the world. But it also lets us have light hearts and maybe even mix in a bit of fun. And that is exactly what our good friend Joe Heschmeyer does in his popular podcast, Shameless Popery. You should check it out at shamelessjoe.com. Joe's got a deep grasp of the faith, of morals, the teachings of the church, all that. But he's also got a witty conversational style. He entertains and he informs. But you will leave equipped to better answer the most common challenges, misconceptions, and questions about the Catholic faith. He's got insightful guests, he does on-air debates, and he takes a close look into all the things that you want to know about as a Catholic living today. You'll walk away knowledgeable and filled with joy. Look for Joe on his YouTube channel. Check him out at shamelessjoe.com or wherever you get your podcasts. And if you like what you hear, become a patron. Welcome back to Catholic Answers Live. Joe Heschmeyer, our guest. Lots of folks on the line. It's Ask Me Anything with Joe Heschmeyer today. Right now, we got a great sale going on over at shop.catholic.com. It's the Faithful Five. Five great books guaranteed to set your hearts afire with the faith. One of them is Joe's book, The Eucharist is Really Jesus. Trent Horn's book, Why We're Catholic. Joe's book, The Early Church Was the Catholic Church. My book, A Teacher of Strange Things. And Jimmy Akin's book, The Bible is a Catholic Book. Get them all for $50. Get each for $10. You just want to pick out one. Pick out A Teacher of Strange Things, for example, $10 right now. Maybe you want to get two, A Teacher of Strange Things and one of the other ones. Then that would be two books for $20. Check it out at shop.catholic.com. I don't think I can say this, what he wrote here. Make sure you check out our March Radness. Can I say that? Is that... I'm not going to say it. I'm not going to say March Radness on the air because I feel like that might be a copyright.
He's trying to get you sued, yeah.
Yeah, I think he's trying to get me sued.
Fired. I did use the phrase Super Bowl earlier, so maybe oh, we're yes. both trying to get you sued.
Right. Do you have advanced written approval from the NFL?
Yeah. Technically, I think it even says you're not allowed to even describe a game. Like, if someone says, how did the game go? You're like, I need to get written approval from the NFL before I answer that question.
Yeah. So,
doesn't feel legally enforceable.
So we're having a sale, but we're not calling it March Radness. All right? We're just not saying March Radness. I will not say those words. Logan's out here in California in beautiful Huntington Beach watching on YouTube. We're glad you're here. Logan, go ahead with your question.
Hey, what's up? I was just had a question regarding the Revelations 12 woman, whether we have to interpret, because I've seen some people interpret that to mean like Mary, but I was wondering if, you know, given the sayings of the fathers and that famous birth pangs verse, I don't know, it's just hard to reconcile that and Mary at the same time. So I was wondering, but I've also heard you and other people interpret that to mean the church. Like a lot of Protestants interpret that to mean the church, and I've heard you say that a couple times. So is there any way that that could mean that we could, is it allowed to interpret that as in it's like only the church and not Mary? Because that just makes more sense to me personally.
Yeah. So let me kind of explain. Well, first of all, hey, bro, I wanted to give an appropriate Huntington Beach response. It was a beautiful, beautiful intro.
I know. When someone introduces you as from Huntington Beach and you go, hey, what's up? And that is, come on, man. Like you are living the stereotype of Huntington Beach.
I enjoyed it so thoroughly. I tried to focus on the question after that, but I just felt so relaxed. So,
dude, just answer the question, dude. Come on, bro. Sorry, Logan.
When you're dealing with prophecy, one of the things that you should know is that it's not always one or the other. Let me give you an example. In 2 Samuel chapter 7, when David wants to build a house for the Lord, and God says, you're not going to build me a house, I'm going to build you a house, he then makes a series of promises for David's son. And one of the promises is that his iniquities will not be held against him. And that he'll, you know, he'll be forgiven his sins, all this stuff. But then he's also promised to have this house in dynasty forever. And so then the question is, okay, well, who is the son of David being foretold there? Well, one answer to that is Solomon. And another answer to that is Jesus. And both answers are right. But it's not that 100% of the prophecy applies to only one of them or the other. You imagine like a Venn diagram. There are parts that are talking about Solomon. There are parts that are talking about Jesus. There are parts that are talking about both. And so we see in Luke 1 that he's going to fulfill this prophecy of David and Solomon by carrying on the Davidic line. And so it's clearly a kind of callback to 2 Samuel 7, but unlike the son of David foretold in 2 Samuel 7, he'll be without sin. So it's fine to say, is 2 Samuel 7 about Jesus? Yes. Is it about Solomon? Yes. And there may be details that apply to one and not the other. So likewise, when we're looking at Revelation 12, it's clearly written in this same kind of prophetic mold. And you can tell this in several different ways. I mean, part of it's just if you've read the book of Revelation. But there's a detail where the woman gives birth to a male child, one who is to rule all the nations with a rod of iron. Okay. So then you say, well, who is that? And this is obviously a reference to the Psalms, Psalm 2, verse 9, in which I will tell the decree of the Lord. He has said to me, you are my son, today I have begotten you. Ask of me, and I will make the nations your heritage and the ends of the earth your possession. You shall break them with a rod of iron and dash them in pieces like a potter's vessel. So the woman is the mother of the Son of God. That looks very much like the son is Jesus and the mother is Mary. But there's another sense in which the rod of iron, which is applied to Jesus explicitly in Revelation 19, that same passage about the rod of iron is also applied to the saints in Revelation 2, verse 27. So if you just do like a study on where we find the phrase rod of iron in the Bible, you have the one reference in the Old Testament, and you have three references in the book of Revelation, one time describing Jesus, one time describing the saints, and one time, this one in Revelation 12, where it seems to be describing both. So one of the ways we know it's describing both, by the way, is in verse 17, where the mother of Jesus is also described as the mother of Christians, those who will keep the commandments of God and bear testimony to Jesus. So because of that, I would say two things. Number one, it is about Mary and it is about the church. And so some of the figurative language, like the birth pains, makes more sense in view of the church and the sufferings of the church than it does to, you know, Mary, who we believe didn't have birth pangs. But the other part is that, as St. Ambrose says, the things said of Mary are said of the church, and the things said of the church are said of Mary. That Mary is an image of the church as a virgin and mother. So when Jesus says that his disciples will be his mother and his brothers, one of the ways we act as mother to Jesus is by bringing people into baptism so they can become sons of God. So in this kind of maternal role the church has, which is why we say both Mother Church and Mother Mary, it's not an either or. The two are best understood in view of one another. Does that make sense, Logan?
Yeah, totally. Thank you.
Yeah, you bet. Totally.
Logan, thank you. I don't have you ever read any of Joe's books? I'd be happy to send you one. Joe, given the
question, I really wanted to get the early church, as the Catholic Church one. That sounds
beautiful.
That book is so gnarly, dude. I would be happy to send that to you. All you got to do is just hang on and give us your address. Edgar's going to pick up the line.
Yeah, give your deets. It's going to be sick.
It's going to be so sick. Sylvester in Syracuse, New York, watching on YouTube. By the way, Logan was very nice to let us play with him.
He wasn't going to be uptight and Huntington Beach.
No, right. Know, like it, so right.
I played the odds of you know, a little good-natured ribbing.
Yeah. I hope he'll call back again sometime. Sylvester in Syracuse, New York, watching on YouTube. Go ahead with your question.
Hello, thank you for taking my call, Joe. I appreciate also the work you're doing, both of you.
Thank you.
And Catholic Answers has helped me also in my walking in the faith and in information. So my question was regarding the Christian iconography. Sometimes in the sacred images, the Father is depicted as having a body. Now, my question is, why is that? Because sometimes in the scripture, we know that the Father doesn't have a body. And,
that's a really good question.
That wise.
So a lot of times in iconography, the Father won't be depicted with the body for the reason you just said. The problem is that we're given a particular way to depict the Holy Spirit, you know, as dove or as flame. We're given a way to depict Jesus because, you know, he takes human flesh. We don't have a very clear way to depict the Father. And so sometimes you'll see like an eye and it's okay. I get it. They are very strange kind of images. And so the argument has been made, and this was actually a source of some controversy. You'll find people in the early church saying, don't try to depict the Father in any kind of bodily way because he wasn't incarnate. But the counter argument in favor of depicting the Father in this way, and I mean, I understand the argument. I've got, you know, the creation of Adam behind me where it is God the Father touching Adam. So I clearly am not, like, against any pictorial representation of the Father, but I understand the reasons to be reticent about it. He often just looks like an older man, like an older version of Jesus, because combining two ideas. Number one, in John 19, when Jesus says, if you've seen me, you've seen the Father, and then two, the fact that this is the Son of God, Jesus, describing the Father. So you want to show someone who is like Jesus, but older. And so I think there's a coherent kind of way to do that on the basis of sound Trinitarian theology, as long as we don't read that to mean that God the Father has a body the way you and I would have bodies. And so it's a dangerous move in one sense. I can understand why people go for the more disembodied, you know, the eye or some other image. But this is why, you know, to remind us that if we've seen Jesus, we've seen the Father.
Okay. Thank you. Great question. Great answer. Thank you.
Thank you. No, that's a great question. You can say that.
But It was a great question. Sylvester, thank you. You know what? Now, because you've been a smart aleck, Joe, where I'm giving him one of your books. That's it.
This is how I sell books.
I know. This is the only way.
No. Don't give books away.
Sylvester, hang on. You can tell Edgar which book you want. We got to take a quick break. It's Ask Me Anything. Joe Heschmeyer is our guest on Catholic Answers Live.
Hang on. Catholic Answers Live will return in a moment.
Underwriting for Catholic Answers Live is provided by Real Estate for Life. Real Estate for Life connects homebuyers and sellers to real estate agents while supporting pro-life organizations. On the web at realestateforlife.org.
One of the biggest mistakes a Christian can make is to try to do good without God's help. Saint Therese said, "When we trust only ourselves and not God, our soul becomes incapable of virtue." Her remedy? Works of charity. And the greatest work of charity is to share the gospel. At St. Paul Street Evangelization, a Catholic nonprofit, we encourage you to share the gospel with someone who doesn't know Jesus. Catholic Answers is supported in part by St. Paul Street Evangelization. StreetEvangelization.com.
Mother Angelica had a simple goal when she began EWTN, to reach the world with the gospel message. EWTN is the most trusted source of authentically Catholic content on the air today, featuring Mother Angelica, Dr. Greg and Lisa Popchick, and Raymond Arroyo. We've never wavered from our mandate to proclaim the truth and majesty of the Catholic faith. Thank you for joining EWTN in this mission.
Back to Catholic Answers Live, where we'll take your call. We might make fun of your accent, but we shouldn't do that, Joe. We've got to stop that.
If people who didn't hear, it was not like a foreign accent. It was California. They, you know,
to a lot of the country, that is a foreign accent, Joe.
That's
I don't know if you know that this. They don't consider California.
I guess for all of our many listeners outside of the U.S., that is a foreign accent. You shouldn't do it. We can do it, but you can't do that. You can't do a California accent.
Don't make fun of... That's right. If you're not from California, don't make fun of the California accent, dude. All right. Alexander is in Salina, Kansas. I always am scared to say Salina.
It's Salina.
Okay.
Not Salina.
No, I know it's tempting to say Salina, but it's Salina. Welcome, Alexander.
Hello. Thank you. And it is Salina. Nice job.
Thank you.
I don't think I have much of an accent, but we'll see if you make fun of me for it.
I'm from Kansas City. It would just be an own goal if I made fun of our accent.
I don't even know what a Missouri accent is. Like,
we would say nothing, but other people claim that we've got something.
The only state that has no accent is Nebraska. They have no accent. Try doing a Nebraska accent sometimes. So you guys must have something, but
fair enough.
All right, Alexander, this is a fascinating conversation, but let's let you ask your question.
Right. Okay, here we go. So I've gone to a few different Latin masses recently, and each time I was amazed at the number of young people and big young families at them. Hmm. And so I was curious as to why you think so many young Catholics are attracted to the Latin mass.
That's a good question. I think that could be a much longer answer. Let me give you a sketch. Number one, this really, we can see it in the data. I did an episode, if you go back slightly, on Shameless Popery, on priests and both their theological affiliation and political affiliation. And it's wild how big of a shift there's been between the kind of boomer era priests and actually even the priests even older than them and priests today. There's been a sea change in terms of their theology and their politics. And we see this as well among the laity. And so I would say that young people, number one, if they are wanting to be Catholic, are embracing something much more countercultural than it was for their parents or their grandparents. And so a lot of mid-20th century Catholicism is like, hey, look, we're good Americans too. We can fit in. We can be normal. And that was, I think, something people were very excited about because they'd been treated as like creepy foreigners and outsiders for a long time. And they were like, look, we're rah-rah. We, you know, JFK, we got the flag. We're good. And as a result, there was a big emphasis on fitting in. And, you know, maybe I'm being a little too trivializing with it. I think that's a valid thing to want to do, to assimilate into the country you're in, especially when you grew up there and are still treated as a non-American for being a Catholic. But the result of that was right at like the worst period of time when the U.S. is going through this really bad sexual revolution, you've got all these Catholics desperate to kind of seem cool and fit in. And I think their kids and grandkids increasingly are like, no, we actually want to do something different than what the broader culture is doing, because the broader culture is murdering unborn children and teaching all sorts of sexual depravity and doing one insane thing after another. And it's also, by the way, deeply unhappy. And so we want something that is older, that doesn't feel like what I could get at a, you know, Protestant church on the street, or worse, at a secular, you know, concert. We want something radically different from that. Second, a lot of the attempts to be hip and relevant, you know, what's Chesterton's phrase? The man who marries the spirit of the age soon becomes a widower. That, you know, when you're trying to seem hip and relevant by doing Peter, Paul, and Mary songs in Mass, that's not going to be hip and relevant for very long. I mean, half of the references I make to pop culture now are 10 years out of date, because I stopped being cool somewhere around 12 years ago.
Wish I could be that up to date.
Yes. I mean, my dad is great at when music comes on, he always tries to name the artist and the singer, because he likes to be, you know, I get my insufferability, honestly. And he's got an encyclopedic memory of 60s and 70s music and is terrible at 80s music and just says, well, that's when we started having kids. And it's like, yeah, it's sure enough. There it is. All of us kind of stop being cool. So the problem with the church trying to do anything that feels too hip or too cool is it actually is pretty cringy. And people don't want that. And even if they do want that, their kids definitely don't want that. Or you trying to seem cool by doing the stuff that was cool 10 years ago, 20 years ago. So as a result, a lot of the stuff that is really comfortable for people who grew up in that era and have lived with it, you know, you've got people in their 60s or so who are doing the same bad liturgical music that was really exciting in their youth. And it's literally the same songs. It's Marty Hagen. It's David Haas. It's the St. Louis Jesuits. It's this handful of like pretty mediocre to bad liturgical music from the mid 20th century that they're just holding on to. And their kids don't like it. And it's driving people away from the church as much as anything. Whereas the truly classic stuff, I mean, not like classic rock. I mean, like the Pange Lingua. I mean, like 12th century stuff. I mean, Gregorian chant. I mean, all that stuff. Like, people are drawn to that and will be drawn to that in 100 years when no one remembers the pop music of today. So that desire for something that is everlasting and endures, I think, is huge. So all of that is a very long way around of saying there's a huge draw for reverence, whether that be the Latin Mass or a more traditionally celebrated Novus Ordo. And I think it's something that parishes should take very seriously. I know a lot of dioceses where if you say, is there a traditional Catholic parish, not like TLM, not like an FSPS, but like, is there a diocesan church that does a very reverent liturgy with no contemporary music? The answer is no. And I think that is a spiritual need not being met. And then people wonder, like, why don't young people want to come to Mass in our diocese, in our church?
Does that make sense to you?
Yes, it does. So thank you both very much.
Thank you.
Absolutely.
Thank you very much. I do think that you know, I don't want to get into a controversy, but it seems to me that Pope Francis, with, you know, he gets all the attention for the Latin Mass stuff, but he has said we need more reverent masses. We need the Mass that we have to be more reverent.
Yeah. I know Salina's got some very good gems out there. Bishop Vinke is excellent. The Cathedral on the Plain is a beautiful parish out there, not a cathedral, ironically. But, you know, so yes, you're right. Like, one of the things that Pope Francis had called for, I don't think it's really being done, is rather than pouring the energy into having some separate extraordinary form Mass, pour that energy into like celebrating the Novus Ordo Mass reverently. I would love to see more people pursue that and say, okay, we're going to really do this by the book. We're going to do the traditional option every time we get a chance to. We're going to do this, you know, precisely and beautifully and reverently. I think if you do that faithfully over and over again, give it a year and see if your parish doesn't grow in size.
Amen to that. Alexander, thanks very much. I'm trying to get as many on as I can now. So I will go to Ben in Colorado watching on YouTube. Ben, welcome. Go ahead with your question for Joe.
Hey, I got a question about the relationship between purgatory and indulgences.
So if I understand correctly, purgatory kind of has a twofold purpose of temporal punishment for sin and purification from disordered desires. So I can understand how indulgences could deal with the temporal punishment for sin, but I don't really understand how indulgences can take care of our disordered desires.
Because God is purifying you, and we are basically entreating him for divine grace in this moment, that he will reward you for whatever reason that, you know, is tied to the indulgence. And one of the ways that he will reward you is by purifying you in the way that he's promised to do so, and that you won't be sort of detained in any sort of punishing sort of way. So the notion of purification has to happen, but it doesn't have to happen over a prolonged or painful period of time. It can happen in the twinkling of an eye. And it's not promised to you that that will happen, but that's one of the things that we lean upon with an indulgence.
Okay, Ben?
Okay.
All right, Ben, thank you. I know it feels like I'm going quick now because I'm going quick. I'm trying to get everybody on if I can with Joe. I want to get to Eileen in New Hampshire, listening on the Amazon Alexa. Eileen, if you could be a little bit quick, not you're not super rushed, but a little bit quick with your question, that will help Joe get an answer out for you.
I'll try. I had my daughter when I was very young. We grew up together, and she was a juvenile delinquent there for a while, but she turned out wonderful, and she turned into be my best friend.
Beautiful.
And she died of cancer.
Oh, I'm sorry.
I'm sorry.
Almost 3 years ago. And she was my only child.
Oh.
And she, you know, I kept thinking, you know, I was born and raised Catholic. I never strayed too far from my faith. We would have a lot of conversations, and I'm just not sure that I had enough of them with her. But when she died of lung cancer at 44 years of age, and
wow.
She endured a tremendous amount of pain. She was a small girl, but her arms, she got blood clots, and her arms just swelled up, and the pain was over the top. She asked me to take her life. I mean, it was that
Gosh.
Bad. Her pain
I'm
wasn't
so sorry.
Being managed in the hospital as it should have been, and she was in and out of the hospital. But so she just endured a tremendous amount of discomfort and pain before she died. And in those moments, we prayed together, and she asked for forgiveness, and she asked for eternal life,
oh.
and asked Jesus Christ
Beautiful.
To come into her life, and we prayed together. And I just would love to hear some reassurance that that was enough.
Yeah, this is one of the most important questions, and I'm so sorry that we're bumping up against the end of the show like this. First of all, I would
okay,
just ask
sorry,
everyone listening to say a prayer for your daughter. And second, we have this beautiful promise in Romans 10, verse 9, that if you confess with your lips that Jesus is Lord and believe in your heart that God raised him from the dead, you will be saved. And this is a sort of minimum in terms of salvation. The catechism sort of speaks of it in that way. These cases can be so difficult, and sorting through them can be something that really only God can do. When someone has said yes in some ways, when they've said no in others. But we take great comfort in two things. Number one, the thief on the cross, who had strayed pretty badly, and then in those final moments, asked for God's mercy. You know, Jesus, remember me when you come into your kingdom. And then number two, those sweet words of St. Paul in Romans 10. And so whatever sins your daughter may have done, God's mercy is bigger than all of those. All of the ways that she's strayed, God's mercy is bigger. The prodigal son, all he had to do was come back and immediately. That forgiveness is there. So you know, it would be wonderful if everything was just nice and neat and clear and, you know, went to confession and last rites and all of that. But even when we don't have those things, we have cause for both prayer and for a confident hope and trust in God.
Ivy, thank you so much. I apologize that we kind of got you right up against the end there, but I do hope that that was helpful to you. I know many people are praying for you and for your daughter. What a beautiful testimony to your daughter as well and her conversion at the very end of her life. Let us all pray for that we can persevere and come to eternal life. And please do pray for Ivy and her daughter. Joe Heschmeyer, 2 days putting up with me, and I appreciate it. Thanks very much.
My pleasure.
All right, that'll do it for us, but we're going to do it again this time tomorrow, God willing, right here on Catholic Answers Live.